Down with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Good evening and welcome to this Thursday night edition of The Horn. I'm Bob. Welcome along. Oh, I said that already, didn't I? Must have come from the Department of Redundancy Department. But at any rate, we are up and rolling for this Thursday evening. Of course, I'm live tonight. I'm live tomorrow night. But after that, I'll be gone for a couple of days. I'll be gone for a couple of days next week. Ferg and I will be in Washington for what is officially termed the Week in Washington, but is otherwise known as Lobby Week, in which we go door-to-door taking meetings in the with House and Senate legislative assistants in an effort to get past H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act, and S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act. So that will probably take me out of commission on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and quite possibly Thursday. But that's okay, because we have tonight, and we've got tomorrow evening, and that's a good solid 6 hours of cussing and discussing. I hope we will make the best of it. I look forward to it sincerely. In a way, tonight is sort of you know what it feels like? It feels like we've been playing catch-up all week long. And that's C-A-T-C-H-U-P, not K-E-T-C-H-U-P. We've been playing catch-up all week long. Moran Monday rolled over into Moran Tuesday. Last night was prayer meeting, and darned if we don't have the carryovers, because there was just, it was too rich a field last night, such that we got stuff to hit tonight as well. There's all kinds of stuff out there. And please pardon my throat. I feel like I've been gargling razor blades. I don't know why, I'm kind of today, so. Oh, there's one of those professional noises that Flush Flemball makes for $40 million a year into the microphone. So I'll try not to strain it too much, but no, my voice is a little icky today. It's been a busy day. It was one of those civics days for my son. I've been down in Charleston all day long. I took him down there today for the purpose of allowing him to be a page for the Senate of the state of West Virginia. And he did, and it was a good experience for him. Had a wonderful day with my son. It's nice when those can happen. And so basically I've been up since 6 a.m. and rolled home, came back up the mountain a couple of hours ago, and just got into the studio a little bit ago. But it's, you know, that is one of the glories of a cell phone, is you can sit there and you can follow the news and actually sort of sit in the gallery of the Senate of West Virginia and do show prep. So that's how it worked out for me. You know, one of the things that was pointed out to me after last night's conversation, Maura wrote in and said, Bob, I know why this Patrick McHenry from North Carolina wants Reagan on the $50 bill. He's a Southerner. He wants that General Grant off of there. And, you know, I was almost ashamed of myself. Being a Southern fella, I can usually spot that stuff from a mile away. I thought it was just the slavish devotion of the right wing for all things Reagan. But you know what? That that makes a ton of sense.
Gonna get that blue-bellied carpetbagger off our national money.
Isn't that just sickening? Would you ever want to? I swear. Like my buddy who used to be an air traffic controller, when they changed the name of National Airport into Reagan National Airport in D.C. He told me once that all of his colleagues refused, and the pilots did too, refused to refer to it as Reagan in their communications, their radio communications, regarding, you know, takeoffs, landings, vectoring, and so forth. Just called it National like they always had. If the Repiglickens, and don't think they wouldn't if they didn't get a half a chance, if the Repiglickens could get Reagan on the $50 bill, would you ever, ever, ever possess a $50 bill again? Oh, no, thank you, ma'am. I can hear me at the bank now. Thank you, ma'am. No. Two 20s and a 10 will be fine. I don't want that greasy-headed old fascist in my pocket. Not that I have a bunch of hundreds to spend very often, but, you know, on getting change for one of the, don't give me the Reagan Monopoly money. Give me two Andes and an Alex. I'd do it. Would you? I'd do it in a heartbeat. Because there is, after last night's little jaunt through the origins of Iran-Contra and everything that went before and everything that went after, it would feel like having a pocket full of poop to have Ronald Reagan in my pocket. Absolutely. If these rotten, miserable, stinking bastards from the Repiglican Party want that filthy old senile hypocrite on one more thing. I mean, it galls me to think that there is a United States naval vessel plying the seas with that old creep's name on it. And one with George H.W. Bush's name on it. Jeez, yuck. What a shame to the Navy. If the Repiglickens want to name something more after Ronald Reagan, it's right here in West Virginia. Not too awful far. You know, you go about 50 miles west of Charleston, then you take I-77 north for another hour and a half or so up to Parkersburg. You hang and you take a right off the interstate, and you take a left at the bottom of the ramp, and the next thing you know, you're in downtown Parkersburg. And you're suddenly at the headquarters, the national headquarters, the absolute place, the national headquarters of the United States Bureau of the Public Debt. If they want to name, and you know, wouldn't it be fun if, in order to counter this crap from Patrick McHenry, wouldn't it be fun if, say, Dennis Kucinich or Alan Grayson or one of the last few remaining good liberals in the House would put forward a competing motion to rename the Bureau of the Public Debt the Ronald Wilson Reagan Bureau of the Public Debt? Now, that's something I could get behind. How about you? That would be downright easy. But that's really not the be-all and end-all of what the program is tonight. That's just a little observation. If some wingnut around you, I think we ought to put St. Reagan on the $50 bill. Just look at him and go, no. That's, you know, putting him on the money, that's far too tawdry. That's just nasty. That's just dirty. That doesn't do sufficient honor to St. Reagan. No. What we need to do, we need to name something lasting for him. We need to name something transcendent for him, something that has a quality of eternity about it, something that will be with us forever, something that he gave us, gave our children, gave our grandchildren, and gave to America's eternity. Well, what's that? That sounds real good. Let's rename the Bureau of the Public Debt after St. Ray Gun. Oh, I think you're making fun of that American hero. You know, he fought bravely in the Second World War. And you're making fun of him. By this time, they probably think he was Patton's second in command on the march across Europe. Jesus. And a couple of emails rolling in. Marty. Try flying into George Bush Intercontinental Airport to visit one's father in Texas. I did fly into William P. Hobby Airport aboard that cattle car of the sky this time, but jeez. And I seem to recall a horror story that horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner once put forward about just a nightmare at George H.W. Bush Intercontinental Airport in Houston. And this rolling in from our buddy Tosh on last night's conversation with Sandra. Tosh says, listening to you and Sandra speak, and I think we've been misinformed. Tosh is a podcast listener. He says, I'm listening to you and Sandra speak, and I think we've been misinformed about the fall of the Soviet Union. We forget that the Soviets took a huge, incredibly primitive country with a lot of potential by contemporary standards and converted it into a military superpower in about 25 years. That being from 1917 to 1944. Says Tosh, that is incredible. The only similar transformation occurred in another command economy, Japan, from the Meiji Reformation after 1853 to the 1905 defeat of Russia. Then, because it served the desires of the oligarchs, continued on a war footing until their citizens would stand it no more. After World War II, the territorial expansionism of the Soviets, coupled with our counter-threats, allowed the Cold War to thrive, but eventually ordinary Soviet citizens, through détente, discovered that we were living in luxury while they slaved away in Orwellian conditions and they had had enough. Says Tosh, I have little doubt that had they focused on consumer goods, they could have produced those too. And finally, says Tosh, your comment about the markets and conglomerates is right on the mark. What is the difference between a corporate bureaucrat manager and a government bureaucrat? If either is indifferent to real market needs, they crash, but in the corporate model, they're likely to get a golden handshake or parachute. I'd say in most cases, the corporate guy is less accountable. The top layers in government are usually accountable to elected people and thus suffer accountability with their elected patrons. That's exactly right. And just to expand on what Tosh has put forward, the least democratic institution in this country is a corporation. And a corporate election is as much a sham as those elections that Saddam Hussein used to hold that we made such a mockery of. Oh, look, he got 99% of the vote, and the other 1% are dead. Well, that's about the way it shakes out in a corporate election, because you vote for a slate in which you have no opportunity to write in which you had no say-so whatsoever as a shareholder in the nominating process, and you either vote the corporate slate or you vote the corporate slate, and the corporate slate gets in either way. That's one of those elements of corporate reform that is desperately needed in this country. You know, it's amazing to think that you can have 50,000 shareholders screaming about lack of accountability, about monstrous bonus packages, about hyper-inflated CEO salaries and you know, superstructure salaries. And there is not a law on the books, not one, that says any corporation in America has to listen to its shareholders if they've got the most, even if they have the most legitimate beef in the world. There's not one law that says they have to listen. William writes in, he says, I have the perfect place for Reagan's image. Let's bring back the S&H green stamps and copy and paste his face on them. Now, to really make it fitting, due to the trickle-down economics, you need to fill 100 books to get a made-in-China toxic fishing tackle box, to include Kissinger, and one bonus gift of a lead-painted lure with mercury eyes that glow in the dark and hooks made of depleted uranium. P.S. Screw putting Reagan's mug on any actual coin or bill, unless it's a gumball machine prize. Hear, hear, William. Hear, hear. So that sort of clears out the stacks. Apparently, I also managed to tickle Tosh's funny bone rather significantly. Poor Tosh listens at work, and I can only think what his fellow workers think of him sitting there laboring away over a hot AutoCAD or some such, cackling away. Your questions about the details of stoning a 12,000-pound orca were way too funny. My mental images included a whale trying to swim on a mound of stones. Oh, brother. It's a beautiful thing having the American Family Association out there. It really is. So anyway, we're in shape for a great show. I'm reminded, by the way, that that lure referenced by William can already be had at Bass Pro Shop now without the green stamps. They get a tax break every time one's rung up. And, you know, why not have toxic fish lures? Yeah, why the heck not? I mean, after all, I don't know if you saw this, but a news story out as of yesterday, the United States Geological Survey, you know, one of them liberal organizations doing that liberal science. The United States Geological Survey released a report detailing the fact that, and I'm not making this up, I'm not stretching the truth, this is a real, genuine news report. Bob's not funnin'. Every single fish that they tested, drawn from 291 freshwater streams from all the way across the United States. Every last one. Little sun perch? Mm-hmm. Catfish? You betcha. Smallmouth bass? Yep. Largemouth bass? Yep. Crappie? Yep. Carp? Yep. Brim? Yep. Every last fish tested out of 291 freshwater streams. Trout? Mm-hmm. All brown, rainbow, golden, brookie, all of them. Every last fish out of 291 tested streams proved to be poisoned with mercury. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar said, "This study shows just how widespread mercury pollution has become in our air, watersheds, and many of our fish in freshwater streams.
Well, that it does, Mr. Secretary, that it does. Gee, Mr. Secretary, why is that? Where's it coming from?
Well, we suspect that the Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland has gone trying to scoop fish out of 291 separate streams in the United States, and some of the mercury from the felting of his hat has leached into individual fish. Because here's the fun part of the news story. The version I'm looking at is based upon a news story that was published by Reuters. Many of the self-same details are in there. However, what is not in there... Well, back up. The study is the first to focus on mercury contamination of streams rather than lakes, reservoirs, wetlands, or oceans. We've done that. These are the freshets. These are the little streams that feed the great rivers, lesser rivers, all manner of running water in a predictable course. It's never been done before. Don't know why. It just hasn't. So out of those 291 streams tested, what did the researchers find? Well, they found that the highest concentrations of mercury are in the coastal blackwater streams of the southeast. How about that? And then with this adverbial caveat, apparently the combination of pine forests and wooded wetlands found in these regions transforms mercury very effectively into its more toxic organic form known as methylmercury. And here's a sort of an afterthought in the story. I laughed out loud. I LOL'd when I read this. Mercury concentrations were also high in streams fed from areas with a history of mining. No. Really? Of the fish tested, more than two-thirds, more than 66% of them, were at levels higher than those set by the Environmental Protection Agency as a level of concern for fish-eating mammals. Which would include us. We're mammals, you know.
Don't tell the American Family Association, but we are. Mammals.
More than two-thirds had so much mercury in them that they reached past the level of concern for fish-eating mammals. Of the test set, more than a quarter of them, 25%, were contaminated at levels higher than those set as the threshold for human consumption. Any lights going on yet? Just asking. But the funny thing about this article that I'm looking at, which comes from a website called naturalnews.com, and as I said, I also looked at the Reuters original copy, you can go all the way through it, and you can find yourself, except for that one mention of, oddly enough, high concentrations were also in streams fed from areas with a history of mining. Go all the way through this article, and there is not a single mention of mountaintop removal, when that is the single largest contributor to stream degradation and pollution in central Appalachia, for starters.
Now, to be fair, the article does say mercury is a potent neurotoxin that builds up in the food chain at ever higher concentrations. What's the word for that? Is accretive? Did I just invent a word? Somebody help me here. Ever higher concentrations in predators such as large fish and humans. In other words, you get a little mercury. And a little bit later, you get a little more mercury. Well, that mercury doesn't replace the mercury that's in your system that just somehow filtered out. It adds to it. You know, the Mad Hatter of Lewis Carroll fame was mad because he was a hatter. You could start out as, say, an apprentice hatter in 19th century England and be as sane as the king himself, or Queen Victoria. But within a few years of dealing with mercury in creating felt for hats, you would be... because the mercury builds up in your system over time. It is especially damaging, notes the report, to the developing nervous systems of fetuses and children. I wonder where those pro-life Republicans are now.
Ah, it's just that liberal science. You know, Jesus wouldn't let no child's mind be rotted out by mercury. I had a mercury for 15, 20 years. Bought a mercury every 5 years. Never hurt me none.
That Marquis, you know what? You could buy that Mercury Marquis, and it was a step down from the Lincoln Town Car, but you know what? It was as comfortable as anything that they was putting that Lincoln badge on. And down where I come from, we don't like no nothing named Lincoln. The pollutant, this is important, the pollutant enters the environment almost wholly, that's with a W, not H-O-L-Y, although I'm sure it is H-O-L-Y to the right wingers, because, you know, well, we wouldn't be getting no mercury poison if God didn't want us to be getting some mercury poison. He's a-visiting it on us because we's tolerating all them homosexuals. Mm-hmm. Did you know homosexuals is the leading cause of mercury poisoning in America? Yeah, sure is. Sure is. Marvelline! No. Really, that is how Repig Lickens, I hate to use the word think. Let's see if we can find another way. That is how Repiglicans perversely process information. And it may also be why Repiglicans are the way Repiglicans are, because remember, the highest concentrations are in the Southeast. Hello? Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, South Carolina, North Carolina, Northern Florida. Lots of coal-fired power plants there, because as the report notes, the pollutant enters the environment almost wholly as atmospheric emissions from industrial processes, primarily the burning of coal for electricity. It then spreads across the plant and settles back to the surface, eventually concentrating in rivers, lakes, and oceans where it enters the aquatic food chain. You know, this is alarming to me on so many different levels. It's alarming to me because you can take a hair sample from anywhere in the country of almost any woman of childbearing age you could point to, take a hair sample from her, test it for mercury, and find out that she already has enough mercury in her system from coal-fired power plant emissions to account for a 10-point drop in the potential IQ of any child she bears. And mercury being accretive, both in human bodies and over time, we have literally dumbed down generations
of Americans. You ever wonder why we had that little explosion of genius there that was Edison, Alexander Graham Bell, Henry Ford, the raving mad anti-Semite that he was? All those brilliant inventors of the late 19th and early 20th centuries had not been massively poisoned by coal or by the mercury from coal. They still had the better part of their minds because we weren't burning coal exclusively for power quite yet as their young minds were developing. Where is that genius today? Not so much. Not so much. That's scary stuff. It's the one thing, I suppose, although you could say that it's alluded to in a sort of tangential form, in Mike Judge's Idiocracy, that isn't directly credited with having created the Idiocracy itself. But remember, the whole movie is predicated upon the great garbage quake of the year 2500, because we'd lost the ability to deal with our trash anymore. This is scary business. But what do you want to bet? In light of the fact that there is a National Coal Fly Ash Association, what do you want to bet that somewhere on K Street in Washington, D.C., there is a National Mercury Association? Really? National Mercury Producers Association. Got mercury? But no, what I was saying is this is disturbing to me because of what it means for the long term realities of our future and our present. But it's also disturbing to me on what shall we call more aesthetic levels. And maybe there are, maybe there aren't. But there's got to be a few people in this audience who have enjoyed the sublime pleasure of either sitting in a boat or standing on a riverbank, casting a line in, watching the bobber, and hauling up a big old channel cat, and looking at whoever you're in the boat with, or maybe looking at your young son on the bank and saying, "We're going to have some good eating tonight." I love catfish. Dusted in cornmeal and fried, and I have God's own recipe for tartar sauce. If it's cleaned and prepped right, it is as tasty and unfishy a fish as you could ever want to taste. Seeing your neighbor come back, pulling his boat behind him, behind his vehicle, or coming back and you just see that he's got the chest there and he's got his catch in it, and sometimes he'd say, "I'm going to have extra. You want some catfish?" You'd say, "Shoot, yeah," because it's good. Oh mercy, it's good. That's gone. And that's cultural. There's a saying here in the hills, because in places where mountaintop removal hasn't gotten to yet, we still have a diminishing population of what are called native brook trout. Not very big at all. But you want to talk about fun to fish for. The streams they live in are not very big, not very broad. and the little fish are absolutely hyper aware. And you literally have to be careful as you go through, as you go up to where it is you plan on catching your little native brookies, not to let your shadow fall across the stream. Because your whole day's fishing will be shot. Because there's some sort of coconut telegraph in the water where one little brookie tells another little brookie, hey, there's one of them big bipeds up there and he aims to have us for dinner. It's gone. It's gone. We're not just talking about the industrial destruction of individual human beings, the planned corporate assault on you and me. We're talking about the erasure of elements of culture that actually extend past us and into generations that pre-existed us and pre-existed the first setting of a white footprint on this continent. Just as the lakes that surrounded, that rested in the Valley of Mexico are largely gone now, with the exception of a remnant of Xochimilco, just as those lakes teemed with waterfowl and fish that fed the largest city on the planet easily, and it's gone. So too the old traditions of those who inhabited this place before us and did so by building fish weirs in streams, by gathering mussels, can't eat them either, and catching various and sundry fish that provided a diet that would be the rival of any human diet on the planet. Gone. It's gone. If we stopped burning coal for electricity today, we would be generations removing the mercury from the ecosystem. Generations. And why does it wind up this way? It winds up this way because of that one word, that one little four-letter word, jobs. Well, if we builds us a coal-fired power plant, there'll be jobs. Yeah, but the people working there are going to have their own children stupided for it. Jobs. Oh, jobs. Okay, well, never mind. But we got plenty of coal. You know, that's like saying we've got... I don't know. That's like saying... Oh, I'm going to get in trouble. That's like saying we do mountaintop removal because we've got plenty of ammonium nitrate fuel oil explosive. Okay? Just because you've got it doesn't mean that using it is the right thing to do. And yet, as Jeff Biggers noted a couple of nights back, Monday night, damned if the President of the United States isn't walking around places to this day saying, looky here, you live in the Saudi Arabia of coal. Who is it? Who do these people think are impressed by being compared to Saudi Arabia? Last time I checked, Saudi Arabia was one of the most repressive places on the planet. And its women have to walk around in beekeeper suits. You know, because they're dirty, filthy, sinful women who are an offense under the eyes of Allah. And, you know, they're so sexually promiscuous. They're so randy.
that they can't be allowed out of the house unless they're accompanied by several male members of their own family. This is a country that still lops off appendages from people for common crimes. I don't want to be called the Saudi Arabia of anything. That's a bunch of sick heathen bastards, the Saudis. I wouldn't piss on a member of the Saudi royal family if his goddamn guts were on fire. It has nothing to do with their religion. It has everything to do with the nature of people who think that they are anointed by the Almighty to rule other people. I don't like royalists. So, I'll take a pass on being the Saudi Arabia of anything. Thank you very kindly, Mr. President. But just, you know, see how things happen on this program? William starts off with an email saying that you can get a Henry Kissinger bonus gift of a lead-painted lure from China with mercury eyes that glow in the dark and hooks made of depleted uranium. Well, why not? The fish is poison. Amazing. Just astonishing. And the other stuff in the stats today. Sort of a carryover from prayer meeting Wednesday. You remember we closed the program last night noting that the Roman Catholic Church Archdiocese of Washington, which is, you know, virulently opposed to abortion, has just put in place an insurance coverage policy in order to avoid providing insurance to gay couples. That is going to make abortion more likely among couples that become pregnant because the mother is no longer eligible for health insurance. Gee, thanks. Well, you're going to love this. This being provided to me by Marty. Headline: Uproar as Catholic Church asks parishioners to pay for sex abuse claims. The Bishop of Ferns, and again, it comes from Ireland. The Bishop of Ferns, Dennis Brennan, has asked the parishioners of County Wexford to help pay the costs of compensating victims of clerical sex abuse. In other words, priestly rape. The general public firmly believes that the Catholic Church should sell their assets to help pay the compensation and legal costs. Parishioner Peggy Kenny says, "It is absolutely disgusting. An insult to the people and an insult to the Catholic Church. All the money they have and the buildings they own, Rome is the place that should pay for it." There seems a general consensus that Pope Benny the Rat should write this check. After all, Pope Benny the Rat is the one who wrote the policy while he was still the chief inquisitor under John Paul II. That said that above all, victims of this priestly rape, that the victims should first and foremost be threatened and made to remain silent, and that it would be okay to use excommunication as a means of securing their silence.
Can you imagine? Well, Eilish Dempsey says the cheek of them. I'm very surprised, as the bishop is very well thought of. Rome and the bishops should sell off their assets to pay for it. Another member of the congregation said, I'm a mass goer, and I won't give money to this. This is the biggest disaster that has ever happened. It is absolutely crazy to ask people to give people, given the property they have and the state the town's economy is in. Another comment, it's disgraceful to expect the parish to pay for pedophile priests. They should sell off their assets to do this. It's like getting into debt and asking the priest to pay for something you'd done wrong. Sick. 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 But then again, that you know, there is mounting evidence that the Roman Catholic Church is morally and ethically bankrupt and stone dead. There is a reason that I've found myself more and more quoting our HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room moderator and forum manager Lottie when he says that the vast majority of the world's practicing Roman Catholics practice their religion with a rosary in one hand and a dead chicken in the other. No one with anything approaching a developed sense of morality and ethics could do anything but howl in rage at a bishop who tells his parishioners that they're on the hook for the sexual predations of the church's priests. Jesus, that's past medieval. I mean, that's Dark Ages stuff. Oh, well, you know, don't you know that the priest did what he did because you are a sinner? Yeah, sin this, Father. I got your sin. Astonishing. Like I said, we got a lot of catching up to do. And just to make sure, there is, and there's serious stuff, and there's really creepy, scary stuff. But there is also, ha-ha stuff. There's delightful stuff. Memo to Repiglickens. If you're going to be a pro-family, upstanding, God-fearing man, and you're gonna rant and rave about the gay people, you might want to avoid getting arrested for DUI after leaving the gay bar! Especially if you are a state senator from California. State Senator Roy Ashburn is the man's name. About 2 a.m. Yesterday, March 3rd, he was pulled over by the CHIPS, California Highway Patrol. I don't know if it was Ponch or John. Maybe both. Pulled over by the California Highway Patrol about 2 a.m. in a state-issued vehicle. You know, state tags, everything. The California Highway Patrol officer pulled him over because he was, he was driving, as we say around here, like Willie Weaver. He was bobbing and weaving. The California Highway Patrol officer identified the driver as State Senator Roy Ashburn, fine, upstanding family man of God, anti-gay crusader, upholder of traditional family values, and drunk. Married, has four children. He issued an apology, of course. You know how it is when you're I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. I am deeply sorry for my actions and offer no excuse for my poor judgment. I accept complete responsibility for my conduct and am prepared to accept the consequences for what I did. What did he do? Well, see, that's the problem. He was observed start to finish in his little in his little journey by the by the officers, and that observation included him waltzing out of a local establishment in Sacramento called Faces. Faces is not Fern Bar. Faces is not a manly man, he-man sports bar. No. Faces is, whoops, go-getter, don't mind me, a gay bar. Or as it's referred to in the article I'm looking at, a popular gay night spot. Yeah. But it gets worse, because not only did he come stumbling out of Faces, not only did he come stumbling out of Faces, he came stumbling out of Faces with a passenger. You remember that old saying about politicians, especially the hyper-righteous ones? He'll only be undone when he's caught with a dead girl or a live boy. Well, upstanding, righteous, right-wing, gay bashing, family values promoting, probably a big fan of Proposition Hate, State Senator Roy Ashburn, had company in the car. Live boy. Oh, yeah. And here's the paragraph I love. It's uncertain how the arrest or his reported presence at a gay bar will affect Ashburn's prospects for re-election. He already faces a fellow Republican in the upcoming race for the seat he occupies in the state Senate. And you know, it's the truth. Because there's no way of knowing. Because of the simple fact of I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. So there's really no way of knowing. But certainly, State Senator Roy Ashburn has to be our right-wing Republican family values creep of the day. But wait! Oh, there's another nominee. Yes, there is. And we will get to him in the beginning of the second hour. My God, look at this. I get behind the microphone. I tell you that my throat feels like I've gargled razor blades. And what do? You sit there and say, ha, 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 let's just see if Bob's voice burns out completely. Ha, ha, ha. I've talked for an hour. I'm filibobstering, and nobody's doing anything about it. Well, you know what the phone number is, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan, you can always find us at 304-658-3333, and feel free to email as well to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. Break coming up. Also coming up, because it's Thursday, the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Always look forward to it and enjoy it. This is America's listener-supported, emphasis on listener-supported, liberal voice. This is The Horn, and this is for Roy Ashburn.
These boys are glad to be gay. They're not afraid now. disco bar in Germany. These boys are glad to be a pumperade now. These boys got leather straps. These boys got S caps. But they got no gun now. Get dressed up, get a little risque, got to a little S&M these days. It's all in fun now. These boys come on again, for the high class boys and the businessmen, who drive in their Mercedes Benz to a disco bar in Old Manchester. And they make mistakes. They're back for business. Some tourists take a photograph. These boys don't get one back. He says they're useless. But these boys come on again, for the high class fours and the businessmen who drive in their Mercedes Benz. In Old
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, March 4th, 2010.
Walmart squeezes suppliers, amphibians that go both ways, plus Obama tries to make energy efficiency sound sexy.
It's very hard to ship windows from China.
That is sexy. All of that and more straight ahead. Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And this is not a Democratic idea or a Republican idea. This is a common sense approach.
If it's a common sense approach, it's definitely not a Democratic or Republican idea. This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is brought to you by Velvet Revolution's Disbar Torture Lawyers campaign. The DOJ Inspector General has found that Bush's DOJ attorneys committed professional misconduct by approving torture and other war crimes. But the DOJ refuses to refer the findings to state bar associations. So, VR will. Please sign on and donate to help support this important campaign for accountability at disbartorturelawyers.com. That's disbartorturelawyers.com. Okay, Dez, we're welcoming aboard our new affiliate partner this week, Stitcher Radio. You can now listen to the Green News Report on their really cool iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Stitcher. Okay, Dez, what do you have for us today?
Well, remember Cash for Clunkers, the program that helped consumers trade in their old gas-guzzling cars?
I do.
Well, now the federal government is introducing Cash for Caulkers to help homeowners install energy efficiency upgrades to their homes.
40% of the energy we use is used by our homes and buildings.
Which means that there's a lot that can be done to increase energy efficiency. They're calling it Home Star after the Energy Star program. The proposed plan provides rebates of up to $3,000 for homeowners to purchase products and services to make their homes more energy efficient, like insulation, windows, and appliances. The measure is also intended to stimulate job growth in the U.S. for manufacturers, installers, and construction workers.
And here's one of the best things about energy efficiency. It turns out that energy-efficient windows or insulation, those things are products that are almost exclusively manufactured right here in the United States of America. It's very hard to ship windows from China.
The important thing to note also is that the rebates will be instant at the point of purchase, but this has to be approved by Congress first.
Oh, that'll happen. What could possibly go wrong?
You can get all the details at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. And now Walmart is also getting in on the act. The global retail giant will use its considerable market muscle to force its suppliers into sustainability.
You know, here at Walmart, we've always focused on ways to making our own operations more sustainable, whether it be in our buildings, whether it be in our private fleet. But certainly the real opportunity is working with our 100,000, over 100,000 global suppliers and engaging them in what I think is a real unique opportunity to impact the environment.
Now, we've had a lot of criticism of Walmart. Is this for real, or is this what we like to call greenwashing?
Well, I think this is for real. Walmart is the 8,000 million pound gorilla in the room, and they can force these changes on their suppliers. Okay, how about some gender-bending frogs? We've reported before on the common weed killer atrazine, which is found at increasing concentrations in drinking water supplies across the U.S. What's now becoming clear is that atrazine is also affecting amphibian populations that live in waterways near agricultural areas where runoff occurs. Frogs are more sensitive to these chemicals because their skin is porous, so they're basically soaking in it. A new study shows that exposure to atrazine can cause male frogs to switch to female and grow female reproductive organs. It also appears to suppress the frog's immune system, which researchers say may be part of the reason for the worldwide decline of amphibians due to a jump in diseases. The Bush administration EPA declared atrazine safe just a few years ago, but a blizzard of new scientific evidence has led the Obama EPA to schedule atrazine for a new review next year.
Did the Bush administration determine it was safe for people or safe for frogs?
They determined it was safe for people.
And yet, it affects the frogs, and who knows how it might affect us.
Right. Lots of new studies show that there are some very serious links with human health problems. Finally, an innovation in portable power that almost sounds too good to be true. An electricity generator that you can carry on your back like a backpack. The Backpack Power Plant, as it's called, is made by a company in Malibu, California. It's a mini hydroelectric generator. It was developed for the military. It's basically anchored in a stream or river, and it generates electricity from the water flow. It's in the prototype stage right now, but should eventually be available for consumers for the hefty price of $3,000.
You mean you carry it on your back, but you have to be near a stream or a river to use it?
Yes, it only can be used in a stream or river. You can carry it to the stream or river on your back.
But then it'll help my cell phone stay charged.
Oh, it'll do better than that.
All right, I look forward to that. Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget to listen to us on Stitcher if you have an iPhone, charged up or otherwise. You can also follow us on Twitter, download us on iTunes. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your fully powered Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. And like I said, we've got another, we do have another nominee for Republican Creep of the Night. It goes back a little ways, and somebody remind me, and I will get to it later on. But you know how I feel about keeping people on hold. I want to go straight to the phones. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333, and we go straightway to those very self-same horn lines. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Garrett, what's up?
Not a whole lot. Did you get my email on Tuesday night?
Not sure.
About the
I get about 500 of those a day.
Oh, yeah, because on Tuesday night, like, not even 2 hours after, not even an hour after the show finished, they, John Ralston, you know, one of the reporters for in town, he has a local politics show here in town. It's
by in town, you mean in Vegas?
Yes. Yeah, which has suddenly gone weekdays because, you know, just the whole, he's been kind of NBC's go-to guy since he's gotten a little bit more prominent since he became MSNBC's go-to guy for the John Ensign debacle. But anyway, guess what? We have a Tea Party nominee for the Senate.
Really?
Yes. Third party, not going in the Republican primary.
Well, you know, the poor little Harry Reid must be absolutely beside himself with joy over that.
Oh, not only Ralston even asked it to this guy. His name is Scott Ashjian, Ashjian.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, asked him. Are you like a plant for Harry Reid?
Wow.
Like, Yeah, he's like, no, Harry Reid's an enemy of the state. I've never met him. I don't want to meet him. He, you know, he dissed Sue Loudon, said that she's just for big business, because part of what was in my email there was a little quick Google search, and apparently he got, because he's in construction here, plus he's got a energy drink company. Apparently his little energy drink company got screwed over in Iowa by Coca-Cola because he tried to market a University of Iowa branded sports drink, but Coca-Cola, who apparently has, you know, rights to sell.
Who owns the University of Iowa?
Apparently, or owns it. The
have a Hawkeye and a smile?
I guess. But anyway, apparently, yeah, his company got screwed out of that, so that must be the explanation. But yeah, he's in the running, and the poll, because the reason why Ross didn't ask him is, like, the polls show that he could screw Sue Loudon out of what should be a sure win.
Oh, she's got to be sublimely happy right now.
Yeah, that might just mess up her helmet hair.
Well, does she have helmet hair?
Oh my God, bad helmet hair. kind of style a little bit, but it's still nothing short of lightsaber could pierce that thing.
Oh my God! I'll have to find a photograph. I simply will. But
she's already got ads.
Well, has the bagger birther tenther deather? Has he come out and said that she's not ideologically pure enough yet?
He basically said that because Ralston asked him, was like, are any of the candidates to your liking on the Republican side? He's like, no. She's too much for big business, and all the other ones, dismissed Danny Tarkanian and all the other ones, and it's like one of the other woman in the race, I can't remember her name at the moment. He's like, no, she's not good enough. And Ross is like, she's the most Republican person I've ever met.
And
it's like, yeah.
Well, and I guess the next question is, does this guy have enough money? Can he raise enough money out of the teabaggers?
He's independently wealthy.
Oh, in the words of Daffy Duck, he's comfortably well off.
Oh, yes. He's socially secure. Yes.
Yeah, there's another one. I'm socially secure. mine. Yeah. Isn't that the same one where we get, I may be a coward, but I'm a greedy coward?
Yep, that's the one. Yeah.
So he can just finance himself. I don't know what the statistical proportion in Nevada is of your average gang of room temperature IQ birthers, baggers, deathers, and tenthers. But if he's got the money to print the signs, then he may. He may be able to screw the pooch and keep Harry in there.
If he gets any traction, because, I mean, other than Washoe County, which is where Reno is at, and here in marvelous Clark County, I mean, there's nothing. I mean, pretty much, you know, there's nothing, you know, nothing out there. If he gets traction on one of the, you know, right-wing crankoids on AM radio.
Well, you know, I feel really I feel really disloyal feeling about Harry Reid the way I do. But I mean, you know, Garrett, I would not shed a tear if that guy lost.
Oh, I wouldn't either. But I find it's this guy I was trying to hold in laughter, because this guy is like a total wackadoodle. Total wackadoodle.
I mean, are you saying he's going to come out there and start talking about fluoridation?
I don't know, but it would not shock me at this point. I mean, he's calling all the Republicans, even the fringe candidates in that senatorial race, although other than Tarkanian, they are all now officially fringe candidates in that Senate race. He's calling them all. He's saying none of them are worth his attention. And he's saying Reid is...
And the point with all of this is, you know, what's the point? What is the purpose of having Harry Reid come back to lead a Senate majority? I don't think that we're going to lose all the way down to 49 Democrats in the Senate. Okay, I don't think that's going to happen either.
I think it's practically a statistical impossibility, especially when you've got fools like Bunning making it patently obvious to everybody, if people were ignorant of it, and I don't think that they're ignorant of it. You can't fool everybody all the time, and there's, you know, things they're not comfortable, and they're getting angry, you know, and they got a lot of free time, you know, and they're losing the cable and the home. You know, people are losing their shirts, and they're getting really angry, you know, and they're starting to figure out how they're getting the balls and shaft. I mean, right now.
Well, and that's the whole point. Mm-hmm. So if we can anticipate having some sort of a majority in the Senate, and understanding that that Harry Reid was so ineffectual as to be unable to get a shoelace wrapping thing bill, you know, the little ends of the shoelaces, he couldn't have gotten that through the Senate on a party line vote. Under those circumstances, what's the loss if he's not there?
Negligible, really, and that's why the theory is that this Ashton's a plant, because apparently it was the first verification that this guy is for real came from the Las Vegas Sun, which is run by one of Harry Reid's friends, Brian Greenspun. That's the theory, you know. Vegas, let's face it, this state loves its conspiracy theories. I mean, hello, Area 51, anyone? Art Bell? I mean, we used to host Art Bell before he ran from the country. He used to live in, like, one of the Cal counties, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here looking at the election map, and you know, they've got Nevada painted blue in the Senate. You know, Senate seats up in 2010. Yeah, I guess. But honestly, I'm sure that there's some sort of hidebound Democrat in Washington, D.C. who could make a great case for what a strong leader Harry Reid is. But you know what? I go back to that conversation I had with Mark Carlin from BuzzFlash, in which he said the reason that the Senate Democrats like Harry Reid is because Harry Reid won't make them do anything. He lets them, you know, he lets them be cats on a parking lot and does not try to herd them.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. That's why, and that's, I mean, certainly that's why he has so much support from all the wannabe ones. Like, well, you know, you like your Blanche Lincolns, who were just, you know, who are, you know, more. Would it be more Dino if they were a Snorkosaurus? I mean, seriously. I mean, and that's the thing. He doesn't lead. And I mean, and again, Nancy Pelosi certainly likes it, because any faults that she has are completely masked by him, because she passes legislation in that House. They do their job. It's the Senate that is the weak side of things.
For the most part, you are absolutely correct.
And that's the thing. That's why I think that until, as long as Reid is in the Senate, her position as majority leader is perfectly safe, because she does her job and she can just point to, well, look at that dolt in Nevada. He doesn't do it. He's so wishy-washy. He makes Charlie Brown look like he's got a set of brass ones. Seriously.
And that's why, as I look at this map, Garrett, that opposing Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas makes so doggone much sense.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to lose there. She's like Harry Reid. She's a non-issue.
And that's why her primary opponent is getting tons of money, because everybody understands that nothing bad can come out of it. If it sabotages Lincoln, so what? We will be able to replace, she'll go into working officially with Walmart, and that'll be the end.
She'll just keep her little townhouse or whatever it is she has in D.C., and she will go from being senator from Arkansas to being trade rep in D.C. for Walmart. That's all there is.
Yeah.
Boom, done.
And then in six years, Arkansas, despite their presidential record, it votes Democratic, so hey, it'll be like a Scott Brown situation where they're like, okay, we're voting against you to get rid of you once and for all. I mean, that's what the thing is with Reed. This Astian will steal away more from Loudon than it will from him, because I think people are fed up with him. With Reed. Because
apparently the people of Nevada are, but again, the Senate Democrats just love them some Harry Reid.
Yeah, but the Senate Democrats don't vote for Harry Reid. I mean, so it's as simple as that.
And right at this point in time, sending some Senate Democrat to Nevada to campaign on Harry Reid's behalf, that would be toxic, wouldn't it?
Well,
I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe yeah. Joe, Li- maybe that's it. Maybe he can get Joe Lieberman to come campaign for it.
Well, that would end the deal. I mean, that would get the Republican, I mean, if old Lieberman actually did come here, it would be an automatic, reason for a lot of people, I think, on the Democratic side to stay home or at least not vote for him. Or at least put a no vote. I mean, it's just, why would I vote for somebody that's just going to kiss up to that scumbag? I mean,
you know what? You are in, Garrett, besides being in Las Vegas, you are in an ideological pickle.
Yeah.
Because it's got to be absolutely just like a bone in your throat to think about voting for the Republican candidate out there. And
well, you can just vote no. No, just leave it empty. If it comes to that, I mean, because there's going to be three, from the looks of it, there's officially going to be three candidates in the race. Astian, Loudon, and Reed, because, again, Reed has no competitor in it at all. So, and the fact is there'll be a lot of people that just leave it empty or stay home. Staying home would be the worst because, I mean, there are other local candidates. There's this governor race. Granted, Harry Reid's kid as the Democratic governor would not be, would be an improvement over Gibbons. But, I mean, a rock would be an improvement over Jim Gibbons at this point.
Well, I can see where that.
Yeah.
Maura writes in from New Jersey and says the only good reason to hope Harry wins is that he is a semi-warm Democratic body that allows us to retain the agenda of the Senate and committee chairmanships. But even that is marginal because, like I said, I don't think we're going to lose down to 50 seats.
Yeah, I don't think that we are either.
And under those circumstances, that means that as long as we stay above 50, then we hold on to the chairmanships and we hold on to the agenda, so to speak.
Yeah, because it will be. I don't think that it'll leap up over 60 in the foreseeable moments, unless a lot of these guys that are up for election make some Bunning-sized, screw-ups. I mean, yes, at least on my math, Alaska and Louisiana and Florida and Kentucky and South Dakota are all leaning barely Republican, but, you know, the fact is that I don't see all of them falling to push it solidly past 60. I mean, at best, it'll be 60 with the Lieberman, you know, which is not 60 at all.
And again, that goes back to the definition of what is 60 that we've dealt with for the last year until the Scott Brown fiasco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
And just looking at this election map, Garrett, you know, Ben Nelson's not up for re-election. So he's going to go on being Ben Nelson.
Yeah.
I guess the Louisiana race is for David Vitter's seat, and you know only in tolerant and God bless him for as tolerant as they are in a way, only in tolerant Louisiana could a twisted kinkmeister like David Vitter's hang on to his seat.
Well, apparently it'll be an issue the south half of Louisiana versus the north half. Because apparently there's like some, I'd have to pull it up again here, but apparently there's one of the counties up in northern Louisiana is getting kind of crazy with the guns. Louisiana sheriff is going, you know, yeah, he's forming his own armed militia.
Nice.
This is up in the north part.
Oh, you can't beat that.
Of Louisiana. I mean, because south is, you know, down near New Orleans.
Right. Hey, Garrett, I got to run, brother, but good hearing from you.
Yeah.
All right, keep us posted, all right?
Yeah, will do.
Take care.
Mm-hmm.
Bye now. Calling from Las Vegas, that's our buddy Garrett, and a little breaking news just sent my way, and the details are extremely sketchy. Breaking news coming out of D.C. With little more than these few words that I'm about to repeat to you. Shots fired at the Pentagon. Details later. And that's coming from ABC News. CNN still hasn't got anything. So ABC News reporting shots fired at Pentagon. And that's about it. Betsy sent that along to me at about 7:19 p.m. The Pentagon is on lockdown. We shall see what we shall see. Teabagger, you think? Birther? Deather? Tenther? Or maybe one of those Oath Keepers. Remember them? We talked about them last week, the Oath Keepers. Yeah. And I do have another story about another Family Values for Piglickin, but that in particular brings me to something else. Amarillo, Texas is not somewhere you want to be right now. The evangelicals are out of the trees and into the streets in Amarillo. And this is scary business, okay? They call themselves the Army of God. Isn't there an Islamic translation for that? Isn't it Hezbollah? Ooh, what? There's a Texas version of Hezbollah. Hezbollah means Army of God. And the Army of God, in its weird, twisted, fundamentalist
Christian version has arisen in Texas. This is creepy. This is frightening. It is being reported that Repent Amarillo is the actual name of the group. They are a pseudo-militia group, and they've decided that they are going to target anyone. Screw the Constitution. They're going to target anyone in Amarillo that they think doesn't meet with their strict standards of religious purity. The targets of their hatred? Number one on the list with a bullet, gay people. Liberal Christians, you know, your Episcopalians, that sort. Muslims in general. Oh, environmentalists. And here's a weird phrase for you. Breast cancer events that do not highlight abortion. Because remember, there's that filthy, dishonest, outright stinking lie being propagated by the right wing out there that women who have abortions get more breast cancers. Mm-hmm. They target Halloween. They target spring break events.
Woo!
They target pornography shops. They even went so far as to post on their website a warfare map of Amarillo. And my God, it's everywhere. I mean, they've got little pushpins everywhere. Red ones and green ones and blue ones and yellow ones. Ah, a yellow pushpin on their map is a compromised church. Noted on the map as compromised churches, C-H-U-R-C-H apostrophe S. God has apparently not delivered them the miracle of English grammar yet. Green pushpins indicate idol worship. Blue pushpins indicate occult witchcraft. And a red pushpin indicates sexually oriented business. They better be careful what they do around those sexually oriented businesses, otherwise they're liable to find themselves some repig lickings. You know, family values, repig lickings like Senator Ashburn from California. Mm-hmm. All kidding aside, these are some rotten, dangerous bastards. What have they done? Well, they've gone after, among other things, a little minding their own business club of swingers. Now, I will leave it to you to define what constitutes swinging. There are some parts of this country, and there are some people in this country for whom swinging means doing it any other way except missionary position. And then there are other parts of the country and other people in this country who think that swinging constitutes doing it with missionaries. But there was a swingers club. And on New Year's Eve, the Repent Amarillo crowd showed up in military fatigues and bullhorns, blasting Christian music at the swingers club. Middle-aged working-class couples that belonged to this club were stalked at every following visit. They videoed them, Repent Amarillo did, obtained their license plates numbers, dug through their trash, told their neighbors and co-workers, and ruined lives. There are people out there who say, I'll never be able to get a job
again. I'm done in this town. Randall Salmon says he was fired from his job of 13 years in August after his boss learned he was a swinger from another employee who was a member of Repent Amarillo. I'm screwed at finding a job, he says. One of the Repent Amarillo leaders, David Grisham, has a son, 20 years old, named Russell Grisham. Kid's got a conviction on his record for hacking the computer system at his high school. Russell Grisham posted the names, photos, and workplaces of swingers on the Internet, including one man whose wife works for a school district. The man says, family-wise, it'll kill both of us. On the 60-some hours of surveillance footage, a swinger can be heard telling a Repent member that the swingers haven't done anything to bother them.
You're going to hell, and it bothers me.
That's what David Grisham says.
What bothers me is you're going to hell.
This is, after all, Texas. Insular, clannish, and intolerant. They're going to go after people attending Earth Day next. They're going after Planned Parenthood. As I mentioned at the beginning of the story, they're going after Race for the Cure. They're going after opening day in public school. They're going after demonically based concerts. I guess that's anything that doesn't feature Amy Grant. They determine who they're going to target based upon what God calls them to do. And I'm reminded of that old bumper sticker. If God just happens to hate all the same things you do, most likely he's imaginary. A theater group in Amarillo had hopes of, had planned all the way up to opening night to put on the play Bent. And it is an amazing theater piece. It's a play about the persecution of the gay community in Nazi Germany, ironically enough. The day before opening night, members of Repent shut down the play by frivolously calling in fire marshals and complaining about the theater's permit. There's a nature preserve near Amarillo. Repent Amarillo accused them of being related to witchcraft. And again, this is Texas. No different than Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina, Oklahoma. They still, in Texas, believe in witches and demons. And ghouls and fiends, when in fact, the demons and ghouls and fiends are all to be seen right there in the membership of Repent Amarillo. And because they're picking on those who are weak and who dare not speak out, they get away with it. Yeah, there have been some resistance groups crop up. Angel Action. There are blogs. There are Facebook groups. But none of these groups has the combined ability to sue these rotten bastards.
And here's the fun part. You may remember a story out of Texas from a year or so ago in which a young woman who, as a child, had been beaten and tortured during a so-called exorcism, sued the church once she became an adult. And she won at trial. The trial jury found in her favor. The church appealed the verdict to the Texas Supreme Court, claiming that their First Amendment rights to freedom of religion had been abridged by the jury verdict rendered against them. Guess what? Hard cases make bad law. Any attempt to sue Repent Amarillo might very well be met with the same response.
Look here, Texas Supreme Court says you can't sue us because if you's to get a verdict against us for ruining your life, it'd be violating our First Amendment freedom of religion. Heathen.
And, of course, we're the Kumbaya crowd. So nobody's going to put a gun up against one of these Repent Amarillo people's heads and pull the trigger. We're nonviolent. We're peaceful. Right? No matter how richly these monsters may deserve it, that's not going to happen. Not even in Texas. Imagine this. Repent Amarillo is ruining people's lives, and they are doing so in a manner in which they are utterly untouchable by the law. And you think that this country isn't going down a path toward civil war? I don't like saying that. I don't like saying that at all. But we most assuredly are. And that is a path that groups like Repent Amarillo have carved out for themselves. It is a war they have declared on you. And they dare anyone to stand up against them because they will exercise their will as they see fit, up to and including murder itself. Because God tells them to. Because God tells them. They want to go back to 1910 for a starter. 1810 as a midway point. And then they will happily be ensconced in 1110. They yearn for it. For Jesus' sake. Ron writing in from Raleigh. How much do you want to bet that no government law enforcement organization, local, state, or federal, will investigate these sanctimonious sons of bitches? Makes my blood boil. Precisely my point, Ron. Precisely my point. Marty noting that apparently Repent Amarillo doesn't realize that their behavior echoes the brown shirts. No. They are religious fundamentalists and any concept of irony is as foreign to them. Well, it's foreign to a Muslim fundamentalist. It's foreign to a Christian fundamentalist, an evangelical. It's foreign to a Jainist fundamentalist, a Buddhist fundamentalist, a Hindu fundamentalist. It's all madness. And like the family on C Street, remember them?
They're the ones who have sermons in which their preachers praise the methods of Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, and Chairman Mao. Even Pol Pot. The end justifies the means. Pray or die. Pray or die. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, I'm on?
You are.
Okay. My name's Margaret.
Well, hi, Margaret.
And hi, Bob. I started hearing about you from Mike Malloy, who I listen to almost regularly.
Oh, bless him.
And found out, you know, from midnight till 3, I'm up here going, I've got to get to bed, I've got to get to bed, and couldn't break. So now I realize you're on from 6 to 9, so I'm just streaming you.
Oh, wonderful. Always glad to add another member to the live audience.
Well, I'm going to be fairly regular. A number of things. I mean, it's been a pleasure. I listened to your, you know, the replay this morning because I got tired of listening to Ed Schultz on Progressive Radio and da-da-da-da-da. It's like I just get tired of it. But maybe you, with your knowledge of the history, I'm 64. So I've got some history. I'm a military child, Air Force, pretty much grew up outside of this country. And sometime in the early 60s, I was in Germany with my dad, and he was with NATO going to the war college, and he brought home a copy of Foreign Affairs. And I was babysitting the kids, and I opened up randomly, as I do often in books, and I started reading this speech that Dean Rusk, remember that name?
Yes, I do.
He was giving a speech to the Club of Rome. And the speech was about the fact that he was talking about the baby boomers, of whom I'm at the top of the oldest part of it. And he said that by the year 2000, they were worried that by the year 2000, America would have approximately 157 million, quote-unquote, marginal men, and that men being generic men and women. And I kept reading, and he was saying, our problem is they are educated, they can think, they've been taught reasoning and science and, you know, all the liberal arts that allows our minds to be open and expanding. And he went on to say, the problem is, by the year 2000, we're not going to have jobs for them. So they knew in the late 50s, early 60s, that we were going to be exactly where we are right now.
Sure. Absolutely, Margaret. Absolutely.
Absolutely deliberate destruction of an extraordinary experiment that most of the world looked up to until the year 2001. I'm infuriated. I'm turning over, you know, I feel like I'm turning over in my grave, and yet I'm not in my grave. But that, I have searched. I don't have the money to subscribe to Foreign Affairs to access their libraries online to find this speech, because I remember reading that. I was in high school, of course. It was 60, 61. We came back to this country 3 weeks before they assassinated Kennedy. So I was in a state of shock, having lived and grown up mostly in Europe.
Otherwise known as civilization?
Yes. And, you know, reading that, I guess, was an entryway to my mind keeping an eye on things. Because one of the things as a military child that I learned a realization during the Cuban Missile Crisis, our base, Ramstein, which is also the headquarters of NATO, which is whom my dad ultimately ended up with. He was an attaché officer with NATO. When they closed SAC down in England, we got transferred, we got an option, come back to America or dad could join NATO, and we would have an extended stay. So we ended up in Ramstein, And the Cuban Missile Crisis came along, and we were on red alert for 2 weeks on that base. We had the nuclear missiles, et cetera, et cetera. And to make a long story short, I was terrified. I went to school on a bus over to Kaiserslautern, which is the next base over, and you know, the scenario. And so for 2 weeks, I only saw my father twice. And during that time, he would come home to get fresh clothes, change, and be gone. 3 hours. About all he was allowed. And he knew I was terrified, so on the second trip home, he took me on a little excursion to the other side of the base to show me the nuclear missiles ready and aimed at the Russians. And I said, well, how long does it take to get there? And he said, about 20 minutes, and I'm going, 20 minutes, They're going to put me on a bus to rendezvous with my mother and the babies in France to be shipped back to the United States all in 20 minutes?
Yeah, that's kind of where you woke up and said, I'm toast.
Yeah, exactly. So he's trying to say, you know, our missiles are going to go up and they're going to meet them midair. And I'm going, nuclear? I was born 20 minutes before they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima.
Oh, my God.
So I came in marked with a nuclear mentality, a nuclear horror story. I believe energy moves around this planet and we're all subject to it. So for him to say that to me, but what happened at the end, when our base went off, when Europe went off red alert, the American military went off red alert, it then finally hit the newspapers in America. All of a sudden it became, oh my God. So for weeks, I don't know how long America was traumatized by this silly stuff, which wasn't silly, it was very real. But we went off red alert 2 weeks after the original incident, in which Americans were not told about what was going on. But once the crisis was over, then they announced it to the American people to lather up the froth in this country. I don't know for how many weeks because I was over in Europe, were played on.
And the whole thing is, Margaret, is that was done, that froth, that ginning up, if you will, was done specifically to leverage Kennedy.
Amen. Exactly. And that's when I came to the realization that the term that I heard in Europe, and I actually was conceived in England. My mother was British, and I was brought to this country in her womb, and I was birthed here. And a year and a half later, we were back in Frankfurt. In other words, I basically was brought up with the European humanitarian type of compassion. And so I would periodically hear the word ugly Americans. And I would ask my European friends, because I used to sneak off base all the time. It was so boring. So I would get off base and go wander around the countryside. And one of the wonderful things that I, you know, realized was that Europeans loved Americans, but they hated the men. And I said, well, what do you mean, ugly Americans? And they finally defined it. They didn't hate the military men. They hated the businessmen that were in Europe from America because they were so ugly. They were so arrogant. They were so disrespectful.
Well, was it Graham Greene who wrote The Ugly American?
I think you're right. I'm not certain. Yes, I think you're right. Matter of fact, I hadn't thought of him in a long time.
That was no work of fiction.
No.
No, I'm sorry. It's a 1958 political novel by Eugene Burdick and William Lederer. It was an archetype, Margaret, of the way that American business and businessmen behaved in post-war Europe and generally speaking all over the world.
Yeah.
After the Second World War.
Yeah.
Because we felt like, you know what, we talk a lot about history on this program, Margaret, and one of the things that is prevalent is just, you know, some time for an experiment, just ask people, who lost the most lives, what country gave the most lives in the Second World War? America. God Almighty, we can't even begin to touch the losses of the Soviet Union.
No, we can't. No, we can't.
Go ahead.
One of the appreciations of your program, as well as the callers who call in, very many of them, they do discuss the history. And I'm living up here in the Asheville area. I have since 1974. And I'm surrounded, of course, I'm surrounded by people who, God bless them, they're the salt of the earth, who are now being inundated because we're one of the top 10 places in the world to live and all this silly BS. And they don't know their history because as I go back to, let me go right momentarily back to Dean Rusk, what he was telling me called the Rome. He said, what we have to do is we have to dumb down the coming generations or we're going to be in trouble. And it was at that time that they started dumbing down the educational system in America. They couldn't do it in Europe. But in America, they started dumbing it down, which is why college students today are not even learning what I learned in high school.
Amen. Amen. Everybody, stand up. Amen. I have said, and if you're relatively new to the program, Margaret, it's understandable because, you know, I don't have this little list of things that I make sure I say every so often. But I have made the argument on a number of occasions that my parents, who were born in the 1920s, who graduated from high school in a little tiny high school in West Virginia, in a coal town, in 1943, got as good or better an education in coming out of high school in 1943 than I got coming out of college in 1985.
Amen. They did. This is deliberate destruction of our intellectual growth.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And they were so terrified, these people like Dean Rusk, so terrified of the baby boomers, the largest generation ever born at any given time at that point, was the baby boomers. And we were educated. And they were terrified of us. And so they set out to dumb us down. And we see it. Generation after generation are so dumb now.
Exactly, Margaret, because, you know, you're at the leading edge of the baby boom generation.
Right.
I'm at the trailing edge.
Okay.
I think the official cutoff for the baby boom is, what, 1964? I'm 1963.
Yeah, something like that.
I'm 1963.
Well, you're right there with us.
And it did happen. It really did happen. By the time I was graduating high school, civics was being phased out. Okay. The very essential knowledge that one needs to be anything approaching an informed citizen was being done away with. And I have argued all along that that was deliberate. Because a stupid populace is a malleable populace, if you will.
Exactly.
And they will listen. Oh my God! You know this could be a week of programs on just exactly the how, the why, and the wherefores of it. You know, you mentioned the lecture by Dean Rusk. Well, there were all kinds of smart people out there that saw things coming. You know, because of the dumbing down of the American people, lots of Americans now, if you say Ronald Reagan to them. They stop and they take a breath and they do everything short of putting their hands over their hearts.
Oh, God. What an idiot.
Right. But what's more...
He wasn't even the man who ran it. Bush Sr. ran the whole...
sure he did.
Administration.
Sure he did. But what'll happen when they'll say, Ronald Reagan, oh, my God.
I know.
But what happens is with the rise of the Reagan generation, there's a reason they eliminated the Fairness Doctrine under the Reagan administration.
Yes.
Granted,
yes.
Bill Clinton didn't help us any in 1996 by signing the Telecommunications Act, okay?
No, he went to bed with him.
But those two things go hand in hand with creating this monstrous infrastructure that allows Americans to be, and I don't know if too stupid is a verb, but it allows us to be stupided. And so people will put he killed the Soviet Union, he did. But the fact of the matter is, there were CIA analyses in the early 1970s saying the Soviet Union will be done by 1990.
Yep.
Because they had, you know, if you want to use
They needed some reason to build up the military. This is what Eisenhower warned us about. And so this whole Cold War thing was a false flag operation.
It was a carnival sideshow. It was a very deadly one. You know, how many million Vietnamese did we kill? 2 million?
2 million?
Yeah. Right. 2 million Vietnamese. How many North Koreans? How many South Koreans? How many Chinese?
Oh, what? You know, go back. You said, what was it, 1100s? I mean, you know, the Crusades. Come on. Genocide. Genocide. What? I have a question for you. Why is it that the white race is so brutal? Of all the races, we all came out of Africa. We all started out black. And depending on the topography we moved to, our colors began to change. They've proven that genetically.
Absolutely, DNA. Absolutely. And that's
why. Why is it that the white race has so murderous? Why? What is it?
Because the white race has always been a minority on this planet. Maybe not in given geographic locations, you know.
Does that make them brutal?
Yeah, sure it does. But you all, and there's a corollary to this, Margaret, and that is that anytime you hear an evangelical fundamentalist screaming about how he don't believe in evolution and my granddaddy wasn't no monkey. Well, first of all, it's like hearing some climate denier say, well, you know, it snowed in Washington D.C., therefore climate change is a lie. You know, imagine that. It snowed in January in D.C. But when one of these mouth-breathing knuckle-walkers says, I ain't descended from no monkey, well, first of all, Darwin never posited, and there has never been to this day, a science who posits that the human race is descended from a monkey or a chimpanzee or a gorilla or an orangutan or any other of the great apes. We are a separate line, but we do have a common primate ancestor because we're primates. But that's all past these people, because when you hear them say, I ain't descended from no monkey, what they're saying is, I share nothing in common with a Negro. That's what they're saying, because you're right. Humanity rises out of Africa. There's no way to get around it.
No.
Through things
how
like...
How glorious is... What irony.
Yeah. And not just rises out of Africa.
Beautiful irony.
What became human beings, Margaret, at one point was down to a tiny band of only 2,000 animals.
Yeah.
And they spread and they became us. And the migratory patterns are established. The mitochondrial DNA, it's done. The human genome and the mapping project is, you can't argue with it.
No, you can't.
You can't make it go back to 6,000 years and hit a brick wall. You just can't.
No, you can't. I mean,
it all arises. You're absolutely right. It all arises in, you know, Africa. Africa is the global mother.
Yes, it is.
And of course, if you want to take it an extra step and talk about misogynistic patrilineal paternalistic society, how ironic that Africa is in fact the global mother. And of course, what have we done?
Destroyed it.
We have destroyed it. Through corporatism, through predatory capitalism, through colonialism, we have done everything in our power to destroy the place from whence we rose. Almost, you would say, in a way, in an attempt to forget it's where we come from.
Yeah, but really, the corporatism, it's all about resources. I mean, haven't we gone into every continent and destroyed those, except for Australia, I suppose.
No, that's been, ask any of our Australian listeners, they'll tell you.
Yeah.
They did a number there, too.
Yeah, we did. We have. And we're still doing it because we have Hark there and we have the nuclear.
The English nobility imported rabbits to Australia because they wanted to put on their tweed hunting togs and get their shotgun field guns out and go rabbit hunting. And the rabbits being rabbits proliferated, and just about destroyed everything there was to eat.
Oh God. And as and now they're in drought. I mean, the vast part of that country is turning into a desert. You know, somebody said, just to flip the subject here, earlier about, you know, when I heard the Supreme Court ruling, I my heart died, about the corpus, being human. We're not human. I mean, I'm waiting for them to say, no, we're not human. You know, people are not human any longer. But back to this election, you know, most Americans, because they're not even aware of the fact that what the Constitution says, except for the Second Amendment, which is BS. And but if we don't get rid of the Electoral College, which was literally to make sure only white men who owned plantations could vote, if we, you know, we Americans, when we vote for what we think we're voting for president, no, we're voting for people to represent our vote. We don't even vote for the person anymore.
Right, and the whole drama of a presidential election. It's drama. It's theater.
It's drama.
It's
glamour. It's drama.
And you know, let's take it one step further. Let's go to who's the French playwright? It is theater of the absurd.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, once you get to the election of November 2000, it's all theater of the absurd.
It absolutely it is. The 2000 election, when I went to bed, I was sick.
When a guy, you want to know? I sat there watching. I'm ashamed of myself because this, I'm exposing my failings. At first, I was sitting there when they called the election for Gore, and I don't do this very often, Margaret, but I went over to my little cabinet and I got out my little piece of paper thin, leaded crystal stemware from another life, and I fixed myself God's own dry martini.
Yeah.
And it felt so good. And you know what? By 6 o'clock the next morning, the whole darn bottle was gone, and there was no celebration left. I can't believe. Oh my God! I was a mess. I was just a wreck.
Oh, I was a wreck, and I had an experience when I finally turned the TV off at 3 o'clock. In the morning, and I went into my bedroom. I didn't turn on the light. I actually had a little light on, and I was undressing. And in the corner of that bedroom came a black light. It wasn't light. It was a blackness, and it was like a elongated oval, and it was a black that I had never seen, a color that I had never ever seen, and it was frightening. And I looked up at it, and I said, if you are not from the love of God, be gone. And it went. And I just sort of stood up and shook off and got back into bed, and I had the lights off, and I was thinking of the consequences of these elections. And while I was sort of staring out of the window, a map of America popped up in my visuals. And I saw this same blackness starting in D.C., spread across our entire country from coast to coast. And it was the same blackness. And I went, oh, my God.
Yeah, almost like some sort of dumped over ink bottle.
Yeah, exactly. Only it wasn't a beautiful black. It was a black beyond my imagination. I was dumbfounded. And I have been speaking up and out as much as I could ever since, here we go, and to, you know, this, another caller had said something about this Louisiana sheriff. He's in northern Louisiana, and he's named this militia, I believe it's called Exodus. But what people don't realize about Louisiana was what carried Louisiana in the Democratic column was New Orleans.
Sure.
And these rich SOBs.
Self-made. Yep.
Wanted New Orleans gone.
Yeah.
Because they wanted it to be Republican. They wanted all of them thrown out. And you know what? I have never in all my life, one of my father's early career things, he had various careers. God bless him, he's passed on. Oh, a total Republican. But he was a meteorologist as well as a flight engineer on the B-52s for SAC. He was with SAC. And he would get me involved in the weather and take me to the weather flight deck and da-da-da-da-da. So I've always loved watching the weather. I have never in all my life seen a hurricane approaching the land like this one did, Hurricane Katrina. It made a 90-degree turn, the eye of that storm. I was watching it on radar, and I went, no way, that's natural. Not in my own heartbeat is that natural. This was destroyed intentionally because they want to rebuild it and get rid of everyone that's not one of their white counterparts, one of their white crooks, because they want Louisiana part of that.
Yeah, look, even once you factor in the turn, still, it was moving at how many miles an hour?
Oh, God, I don't even remember anymore.
40? 30?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't much at all. This was so unnatural. I was speechless. I'm still speechless.
Remember, because, you know, among others, our buddy Kate went down to do Katrina relief on the Mississippi Gulf Coast and also wound up working in the New Orleans area as well. She pointed out on a number of occasions the devastation in Mississippi was horrifying, and it was brought on by the landfall. But the devastation inside New Orleans is an entirely different matter.
Oh, that was all about
was the levees and the Corps of Engineers. And
the Corps of Engineers have been at,
you know, that's what you get
when corrupt or institution for what, 50 years?
Every bit of it.
Absolute
because,
corrupt.
You know, that you can expect to happen to the lower ninth ward what happened to the lower ninth ward when your levees are improperly maintained. And they're, what, Category 3 levees trying to deal with a Category 5 hurricane? But again, the Corps of Engineers, my God, they have been, you know, they've rubber-stamped these massive toxic waste sludge seas.
Oh, God.
Here in the Appalachians.
I know.
You know, Corps of Engineers, please, excuse me?
It's
Engineers? Apparently, Corps of Engineers means that they all get to walk around with striped overalls and funny hats now because there's no engineering going on. The engineering report for the Brushy Fork sludge impoundment in western Raleigh County, West Virginia, it holds back 9 billion gallons of toxic waste, Margaret.
9 billion gallons?
It's the largest earthen dam in the western hemisphere. It's the largest dam in the western hemisphere.
Where is this? Where is this?
Raleigh County, West Virginia. It is permitted to hold a little more than 9 billion gallons of toxic waste.
Now, where would, if that dam gave...
Wait! Oh, wait, no. You think the hairs are standing up on the back of your neck. They're not yet. Okay? Because the engineering reports that Massey Energy submitted to the Corps of Engineers and the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection say, in their own estimation, these are the company's engineers, that when that dam fails,
when
1,000 human beings will die immediately, and that a wall of water 40 to 60, no, not water, a wall of toxic waste 40 to 60 feet high will travel down the Coal River Valley. And there is no means of escape for anyone in its path.
Oh, God.
But it gets better. The heroes, the young volunteer heroes who have tree sat, who are rotting in jail right now on excessive bonds that were on bails that weren't even to which not even a child molester was subjected. We're doing those tree sits because that dam, That dirt and rock dam, no concrete, just dirt and rock. That dam that holds back those 9 billion gallons of toxic waste. And all those 9 billion gallons are sitting on top of a mountain that is wholly and completely honeycombed and undermined and full of water and hydrologic pressure of its own. Massey Energy is detonating explosives within 200 feet of it.
What? You gotta be kidding.
Nope.
How many acres is this?
You can see it from space.
Another perspective?
You can see it from space.
Oh, God.
There was a report released yesterday by NASA on another mountaintop removal complex that got going in, what, the early 90s or late 90s? Mid-90s? Called Hobet, and that thing has encompassed more than 10,000 acres now with sludge dams and valley fills, dead mountains.
Is this like the sludge that let loose in Tennessee?
No, that's coal ash. That's the end product. This is what happens when you use a lot of toxic chemicals and gallons upon millions of gallons upon billions of gallons of fresh water to wash coal. It contains every noxious thing under the sun. Okay? It has leached into people's wells.
Yeah.
There's a place called Printer Holler, P-R-E-N-T-E-R. You can look it up. There's not a gallbladder left in the holler. There are children whose mothers, just like any mother does, first thing when they get up in the morning, baby, go brush your teeth now. And baby goes and brushes teeth. After lunch, don't forget to brush your teeth. Don't forget to floss.
God.
After dinner, brush your teeth. Don't forget to floss. Before bed, brush your teeth. Don't forget to floss.
Oh, God.
And every tooth has rotted out in the children's heads because of the water that they're brushing their teeth with. Because the water is poisoned by this toxic waste that is seeping into their wells. A couple of months ago, a 23-year-old young man was buried having lost a heroic battle against kidney cancer. Guess what? 23-year-olds don't just crop up with kidney cancer.
No, no. Well, look what they're finding out in Fallujah.
Sure.
Did you hear that report from the, two or three a day of women giving birth or giving birth to deformed? I mean, we used uranium there. We used...
Sure.
Oh, God, awful. God. Oh, what?
Because somebody presented a report to the Pentagon that said, you know what? We got all this uranium laying around. Might as well do something for it. It's heavier than lead. Bet you that'd make a really good, great big bullet.
Yeah.
And any good old boy who's ever cleaned a rifle after going out hunting knows that there's a little bit of that bullet and a little bit of that casing that gets aerosolized traveling down the lands of that rifle barrel. And so it poisons our soldiers, it kills the people it hits, and then it poisons the ground because the stuff aerosolizes.
We thought Vietnam was bad.
Oh, Agent Orange, no offense to the people who have suffered with Agent Orange, but Agent Orange was a walk in the park compared to this stuff.
Yeah.
And by the way, one of the things you'll find if you stay with the program long enough is that even when we don't have other people on the line, Margaret, we have this beautiful interchange of ideas that happens because people like to email and interact with callers, in real time. And our buddy Reverbo just wrote in and said, all I would suggest to Margaret is that it's all humans, mostly men of all colors and races who are so deadly, not just white men.
I agree with that.
He says, the 20th century was so far the most destructive 100 years relative to human life, and just about everybody had a hand in it. Just look at the slaughter that happened in China with the Cultural Revolution. Ask the people of Africa how peaceful that continent has been.
Yes.
Whether motivated by politics, religion, or economics, it's all about man's selfish justification, selfish self-justification for brutality.
Now, I wonder... I agree with him. I agree with him. I understand that. And I really have an ext- I have, you know, when we first entered into 2000 and 2001, I mean, I was begging people not to vote for Bush because I had read up on his history. But it was rather dumbfounding that we baby boomers were, it seemed we were oblivious. There were some of us who weren't. But, you know, Taylor Caldwell gave us a gift. And she actually wrote a book called Captains and Kings that was dedicated to the baby boomer generation. Dedicated to us. It had a bibliography, it has a bibliography in the back of it that is extremely extensive. And many of the books you can't even get. You have to go to the Library of Congress and read them there if you want to even access them. But it was dumbfounding what she, I mean, if we really want to understand how the Industrial Revolution, how it began and what it did and its accomplishments, every American ought to read that book if they want to be educated. And I have from the point of about 2001, I started reading, it was like, what is tribalism? You know, in the 50s, in this country, after World War II, we were settling in, our men were back, we began to build things and manufacture and so on and so forth. And all of a sudden, what was it, mid-50s or late-50s, I'm not so certain when, because I was out of the country, but they started breaking up our communities and shipping the corporations, okay, now you're going to California, you're going to New Mexico, you're going to Colorado, breaking up these family, these groups. Because they were fearful of the Irish American groups, the Chinese groups, all the groups that sort of congregated together around our country, and they felt one another as communities. And they see that as a threat. So they started breaking us up and making us transfer, you know, from one, you know, out of the areas that we grew up in and started breaking up family units. This is so deliberate.
Well, Margaret, I don't know if you're familiar with this fact. But it is a fact. For all of their talk about family values, the Republican Party they hate this statistic. The last time, and I'm not, you know, this has nothing to do with whether I think women should or should not work. Women should work if women want to work, okay?
Yeah.
That's just kind of that way. But the last time in America that a family could get by and that a majority of families in America were comprised of a single wage earner leaving the home and going out and bringing home the bacon. You know, that traditional, you know, leave it to
right.
Beaver world,
yep.
the family model.
Right.
Carter administration.
Was it that late?
Yeah. It was on the way out, but it was the Carter administration.
The
Republicans and a whole bunch of Democrats like to talk about Jimmy Carter as being some sort of ineffectual president.
Oh, he wasn't.
He wasn't.
Agreed with something.
And the corporatists did him in his own party. But the fact of the matter is, if we had listened to his energy speech and gone down the road that he laid out in that energy speech, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in. And secondarily, everybody. Well, you know, remember the malaise. And the stagflation. Nobody seems to remember that Gerald Ford was dealing with crushing inflation before he was thrown out of office and Carter was installed. I seem to be one of the only people who remembers Gerald Ford initiating an anti-inflation initiative that solely consisted of getting every American to wear a red button with white letters that said WIN. And stood for whip inflation now. Because even though I was, a 12-year-old at the time, I was sitting there watching this thing be unfurled and going, what? What? We're going to beat it with a button? we're going to right the economic ship of state with a button? Really, Jerry?
Yeah. No, that man was... He was an oddball.
And you know, ultimately, capital, this has to be borne in mind. You know, last night Sandra was talking about the mixed economies and regulation and how to make it all work. But at the end of the day, it comes down to one thing, Margaret. We've all got to be aware of this. The nature of capitalism, and especially the capitalism as it is modeled and espoused by the modern so-called conservative or right-wing or fascist.
Ayn Rand.
Ayn Rand, exactly. Anarcho-Randians. The bottom line is this. Capitalism is a zero-sum game.
Yep.
For one to win, somebody else has to lose.
Yep. And they want we Americans to accept $3 an hour or $1 an hour. They don't give a damn. They don't want us. They want us gone. And this inflation is just another one of their jerry-rigged tools. It is all screwing us. It's just screwing us.
Right to the wall. Oh, and by the way, another manifestation of the of what goes on here. You mentioned the Dean Rusk speech.
Yeah.
And one of your fellow North Carolinians, Ron in Raleigh, said the speech that you've referred to could be one that was given on January 29th, 1962. It was called "Where the U.S. is Headed in Today's World."
Wow.
But it probably was not at the Club of Rome, because the Club of Rome wasn't founded until 1968.
Okay. You know, when I went on search trying to find this back in the early 2000s, because it was brought to my mind, I went online trying to find anything about this. And I remember this because we were still living in Germany. We returned, like I said, here 3 weeks before they murdered Kennedy. And so I knew it was within 60 to 62 that he gave it, and for some reason I must have seen something else that was the Club of Rome. I'm not a normal American because I was raised outside of the country. I was raised with a whole. I cannot hear anything that doesn't bring up a worldview before I think of America. I'm too aware of the world. I've lived in too much of it. But okay, where the U.S. is headed in today's world, January 29, 1962. I will go, because I wanted to reread that. Like I said, I read it while I was babysitting. I was bored, and I just picked it up, and I thought, well, what's in this?
Well, if Ron is able to go out there and find it, or one of the news ninjas, they're very good at this kind of thing, I will make sure and mention on the program that we have run across it, and you can drop me an email, and I'll send you the link.
Thank you. I really would like to read it, because my mind... You know, I'm 64 now. That was when I was, 16 or 17 years old when I read it. And that's too long in between. I just remember this marginal men, and what are we going to do about it? And we need to dumb down, you know, basically the American educational system. And I was just...
But, stunned. You know, that phrase is even somewhat astonishing to me, Margaret, because marginal men...
Marginal men.
Isn't that just a hop, skip, and a jump if that far a distance... From the German concept of Untermenschen.
Well, haven't we had echoes of those concepts now for what, a decade and longer? I mean, you know.
Well, I remember as far back as the late '80s when I was at CNN, the burgeoning talk about what will happen to the underclass.
Yeah.
That there had been. Another class of people in this country who had come into existence who no longer even qualified to be lower class.
Well,
because it was always upper, middle, and lower, and they were and social scientists were struggling to find some way to describe a significant portion of the population for whom America simply does not work and wasn't working and wasn't going to work and never would work. And the only thing that they could only and what they came up with in the late '80s was underclass.
Underclass. And I wonder what percentage of Vietnam vets were part of that. You know,
Right, and then you get some soulless, motherless, miserable Republican out there saying, "Well, you know, these homeless veterans, they're homeless because they want to be that way. They don't want to live with a roof over their heads."
Oh,
Yeah, I, you
and you know, that was 10, 15 years ago, and those same, and this is the frustrating thing about the right wing, Margaret, they are, God, they are so good at perpetuating this filth and repackaging and rebranding it. You know, it wasn't 2 months ago that John Lederer, I think is his name, he's a Republican from Georgia, who said that we are creating a permanent dependency class with these damn food stamps.
Yep.
And then, boom, a week ago, this creep from somewhere out west who says that extending unemployment will create the rise of the new hobo?
Yep. Now, how do they keep, you know, what don't we remember about the fact that My Way or the Highway, which came out of the late 80s? I mean, that was the corporate world. Now, back in, what was it, 75 or 76 maybe, buried in Section A of the New York Times, way in the back, maybe it was Section B, it was like page 26, I was...
Oh, you've got one of those memories too, don't you?
Well, and it's an oddball memory. It's an amazing memory, and I wish I had honed it better. But there was a little, literally about an inch and a quarter, buried, little bitty headline, about an inch and a quarter, and it was about how the FBI had learned about neuro-linguistic programming. And it was a new weapon that they were going to use against the people. And I've never been able to find that little bitty piece either, because I won't spend money with New York Times anymore. It's a wash job. But at that point, they didn't actually say neuro-linguistic programming. They were just sort of saying, whoops, we've got this new, you know, and they had begun to implement it. In the early 80s, maybe 84, 85, the first book about neuro-linguistic programming to reach the public was called Frogs into Princesses. And I read it. I was actually working in a bookstore, one of the buyers as well as the bookkeeper, and I read that book and I went, wow, this can really help people's lives. Okay? And then I went, oh my God. And I flashed on that little bitty inch and a quarter thing, notice about what the FBI was.
This will not be used for good.
Exactly. Everything we're discovering, everything our imagination has created, is neutral. And it's how we use it. And who gets their hands on these things first? It's the military.
Sure.
You know, and you
Well, look at the constant battle that Kennedy had to fight over the militarization of space. Guess what? That's a battle he and the rest of us wound up losing.
He wound up losing it. You know, he was murdered 3 weeks after he had a meeting in London. Actually, it wasn't in London. It was on the Isle of Wight with the financiers, that group of 12 that literally run the money in the world. They are still in existence. Taylor Caldwell wrote about them, which is where I first became aware of them. And once something gets into my mind keeps track of these things, and they catch these things. And he told them he was going to put America back on the gold standard. And they said, no. You do, and you're dead.
Had a lot of people hating him.
And guess who ran that operation? Bush Sr. was the head of the CIA. And what people don't remember is that Bush went to China and made some kind of deal over there, and then Nixon went over there 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks later, and came back to America and said, voila, look what I've done. It was Bush Sr. And what people don't know about Bush Sr., the Bush family, is they, do you know how they made their money, their initial millions? Do you know how they made it?
I know pretty much the whole history of the Bush family.
They made their money trading drugs through Hong Kong.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a chunk of it. I know that
big chunk of it.
I know that they really got the front feet in the trough with the First World War, when either a Walker or a Bush or, you know, one of that filthy clan was put either at the head of or a significant membership on the War Materiels Board.
because one of them, and, you know, they're all tied together, walkers and bushes. One of them had been, I think, a parts supplier for the manufacture of railroad cars, and there were ties to Rockefeller, and they were sort of a couple of tiers down on the ladder, below the really respectably nouveau riche, you know, the Chases and the Morgans and the Mellons and
they made their original huge amounts of money trading opium out of China. And that was before World War One, long before. It's sick. I don't know how we stop it. How do we bring an end to it? I think they're imploding on themselves, but we don't, you know, it's just like this god-awful sheriff in Louisiana, northern Louisiana, who's now got a tank with a machine gun on it.
Well, and it gets worse. I'm just getting an email in from Bethany. Who tells me, Margaret, that Repent Amarillo, that I was talking about before I came to your call. Repent Amarillo is an affiliate of something called Raven Ministries. And, in fact, Raven Ministries has member groups in a number of different states, in Mexico and Canada as well. They call what they have the Network on the Amarillo Raven Groups site. You know, and if, you know, you say you came to the program via Malloy, then you have doubtless heard Malloy talk on a number of occasions about Christian Reconstructionists.
Oh, yes. I went and actually Googled Dominionists after he gave some.
Right. Well, yeah. And Dominionists are, Dominionists are different animals than Reconstructionists. They're both sickening. Dominionists are actually the milder of the two forms.
You're kidding.
Dominionists believe that we can do anything to the planet that we want to because God gave us dominion over the planet.
Right.
You know, as if he was just going to go whistling off down the lane and, you know, well, you've got dominion of the planet. Good luck.
Yeah.
I won't let anything, but, you know, I've given you dominion, but I won't let anything bad happen to you. And that's how you get Michelle Bachmann standing on the floor of the House of Representatives talking about how CO2 is good for you. Okay, but the Reconstructionists, these are the really evil, pernicious, the totalitarian thugs of the movement, and they have insinuated themselves in many cases without individual church members knowing it. It just shows up in the doctrine. They have insinuated themselves into Baptist churches, Methodist churches, Presbyterians. Remember, D. James Kennedy, who is now roasting over a spit in hell, was the leader of Coral Snake Ministries, which was a Presbyterian church in Florida, and he used his pulpit for some of the most rabid, miserable, hate-infested screeds against people for how they choose to love each other that this country has ever heard. Presbyterian. The Reconstructionists are everywhere, okay? They're not some little isolated cult living on Coca-Cola and Cheese Whiz out in the middle of the woods somewhere.
They're in our faces.
They are in our faces. They are in our towns. They are in our schools. They are in your government. And they mean you no good. You know, Reconstructionism. I had the story last night about how the American Family Association wants to stone a whale to death. That's Reconstructionism. The leader of the Reconstructionist movement was once asked about capital punishment, and he said, "I'm in favor of it, and I prefer that it be done by stoning because we got a lot of people to stone and we got a lot of rocks."
Jesus God. What?
If they can get power, their stated goal is to overturn the Constitution of the United States and establish biblical law. There is not a dime's bit of difference between them and some crackpot Ayatollah in Iran.
No, there isn't. There isn't. You know, did you see that memo that came out of the Phoenix FBI office, 2003 or so, where they literally listed the groups that they considered terrorists? People who carried a constitution around with them were on that list. Environmentalists. I've been an environmentalist since 1974. And all of a sudden, you know, it's like we were terrorists. Anybody.
But you talk, but again, you use that word, Margaret, environmentalist,
You've been an environmentalist since 1974, but you became an environmentalist. You talk about the language manipulation. You became an environmentalist when the other side coined that term for you.
Yeah, labels.
You know, the fact of the matter is, the Rush Limbaugh spent 10 to 15 years working over liberals until liberals were afraid to say that they were one. And then they said, okay, well, Rush, you win. I won't be a liberal anymore. I'll be a progressive.
Yeah.
See, I'm a progressive. I'm not a liberal. You don't call me liberal. I'll cry. I'll wet myself. And so they became progressives. And guess what? What's Glenn Beck working on now?
Progressivism. A cancer on America.
You know,
we are so far behind the curve on these fascist bastards, Margaret, that we think we're on straight road.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph. I'm very ex Catholic, so I mean, don't even.
That's okay. I'm a recovering Southern Baptist. Welcome to the flock.
Oh God. Reconstruction. Oh, God, do I dare go try to find out anything about that?
Oh, go ahead. You won't sleep. You know, I'm sure you've heard Malloy talk on a number of occasions about the fact that he is a gun-toting liberal.
Yeah.
And about how he has a permit to carry.
Yeah.
Well, the reason, if I recall correctly, the reason Malloy has a permit to carry is because the authorities told him to go and get one because of the death threats that he received from Christian Reconstructionists when he began hammering them all the way back when he was on the air on that on the South's 50,000 kilowatt blowtorch.
Oh, boy.
WSB Atlanta.
I've heard him say that and it didn't click. I heard the word Reconstructionist and I just it's like there's so much on the mind that some things get by you and now it's coming into my picture. Okay. Yeah, I've heard him talk about that. Hell, he can't be 100 miles from me.
Oh, probably not. No. There's just not a whole lot of difference between the mountains of western North Carolina and the North Georgia mountains and the East Tennessee mountains. It's all Appalachia to me.
Yeah, and rightly so. My God. Well, I guess we're toast.
No, Margaret.
Saying, you know, I don't want to live on this planet if I have to own a gun. I do not.
Well, I'm in West Virginia, and I'm legally required to own one. No, I got guns.
Well, we can't go in a national forest anymore.
No, you can't, and you can't go in a forest in Amarillo for fear of being called a witch. And what do we do to witches?
Oh my God.
Remember, they got them a Bible that says, "Suffer not a witch to live, Margaret." And they're literalists, up until the point where they start talking about how an ox is the same as a whale. Then they're not so literal anymore.
These are
crazy, religiously demented, dangerous people who, if they espouse their views under any other rubric save religion, would be in a little rubber room taking heavy medication with a purple crayon between their toes, writing on the soft, soft walls.
What happened to being raised, you don't yell fire in a theater? These people are yelling fire.
Margaret, they don't believe in it. See, to them, the Constitution is just like Tinkerbell at the end of Peter Pan. If you don't believe in it, it doesn't live. They don't believe in the Constitution. They don't believe in a nation of laws and not of men. They believe in a nation that is one nation under God. And he's a mean God because he loves you.
That's just... Well said. Oh, God.
I know.
Oh, God.
Margaret, this has been a delightful conversation, and I appreciate it so very much, and I hope this won't be the last call.
No, it won't be. And, Bob, it's so nice to meet you. Thank you, and I will support you as I can. It won't be, you know. But what a pleasure. Thank you.
It has been an absolute joy.
Now that I know I can stream you live from 6 to 9 Eastern Time.
You'll be getting better sleep.
Huh?
You'll be getting better sleep. And you know what? If you miss it live and you don't want to wait up for the podcast,
and you want to catch it during the day, if you go to our stream, we've got a 24. If you just go to headonradionetwork.com and click Listen Live, you'll hear the rerun at any time of the day.
That's what I found out by I was listening to Tom Hartman, streaming him on my iTunes, and it was like I got tired of there was some guy he was interviewing, and it was like I can't stand this. So I went into the computer, flipped it off, and I saw Head on Radio, and I thought, So I hit on that, and lo and behold, you know, I'm listening to your, by the way, that Wednesday, that, it was great. The Wednesday introduction to the prayer thing, or what did you call that?
Prayer meeting.
Yeah, the prayer meeting. I just sat here and just cracked up. My cat scattered. It was so funny. And then I just thought, you know, let's go to the website and see when he's live. And because I'm trying to listen to you from midnight after Mike's off, from midnight to 3 in the morning, and it's like, I gotta go to bed, and I couldn't get off the phone. I mean, it's like, just in rapture listening to all these wonderful conversations. So I'm delighted, and thank God you're there. And I look forward to listening to you more and listening to your call-in people because, yes, it's been a breath of fresh air for me to hear others speak of the history that I'm aware of, that makes sense. That it's like, how do we change this? How do we?
There is no Margaret. There is no better thing that the horn does, no higher calling, than when we close the gap, when we close the distance between people who have been bombarded with propaganda for 25 years that they're out there all alone.
Well, you know, you feel like you're alone, and you know you're not, but at the same time, until you can actually hear somebody else, you can take a little sigh and go, okay, there's somebody else that's, you know, we're carrying a load. We are carrying a huge load for the human race.
Yeah.
For the human species, not race. We're not a race. We're a species. And we don't deserve to be a species.
Don't worry. We're working on not being one.
Absolutely.
Margaret, have a wonderful evening, and thank you for the delightful conversation. And, tell your friends and neighbors. Asheville's a fairly liberal little neighborhood. Let them know we're out there.
I will.
Because the more we add to the quantum of the conversation, the more success we know we're having. And I don't mean as a business. I mean as a function of changing a mindset.
Yes. No, education. You're educating. I mean, you're planting seeds. I mean, there's so many people who don't. I have young people who try to, I'll stop to get a red eye or something at a little coffee shop on Lexington Avenue. Yes, we have a lot of progressives. We have a lot of artists here. We also have an interesting eclectic mix. But these younger people will get into a conversation. And then they start asking me questions, and I find myself talking on, and they're just enthralled because they've never heard it. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I look at them and I say, well, all you gotta do is read. But keep talking, and I'm going, do you know how to make change? Well, no, they didn't teach us that. College-educated kids.
I know, and that's part of the purpose of why we're here is why we coined the phrase conversation radio, because the conversation you and I have just had, Margaret, cannot happen on terrestrial over-the-air commercial radio. It can't happen.
No, it can't.
It can't happen on NPR. It can't happen anywhere but here.
Well, that's what I found out. So thank you so much, and God bless you all, and I'll call again.
Okie dokie, Margaret. Take care.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Wow. First-time caller, Margaret, and I think she hit a really solid triple, right? That was an inside-the-park home run on the first pitch. Just wonderful. Hey, you know what? I've got let's see. Are you still there? You are.
Hey, Bob. It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin. What's up?
Nothing much. This will probably be my last call on this side of the planet.
But, oh, wow. I was going to say, you're still here.
Yeah. I'm leaving. I'm shipping out Sunday night.
Wow.
I don't know. I'll try and call tomorrow if heaven's permitted, but this will probably be my last call. you know.
But the email works from the other side of the world.
Yeah, and don't worry, once I get the time adjustment working, most likely it'll be a Friday, because we're 14 hours ahead.
Right.
So most likely I'll be calling you like, what is my Saturday morning, afternoon will be your Friday evening. But, yeah. So, you know, I just want to say, you know, Charles Rangel, that can easily happen to me.
How do you mean?
Like, because now they're digging into how come he owns his house in the Caribbean and all this.
Right, right.
You know, they're getting really, really petty now. And it's just like, okay.
No, I don't think they're getting petty, Kevin. And they're not getting anything. They're being what they are. They are mean, and they are ruthless.
Yeah. And, again, it's like, if you look at, you know, and again, it's just one of those things that it can easily happen. Because the thing is, first of all, the man is half Hispanic.
Yeah.
Okay. He most likely has family from the Dominican Republic or Puerto Rico, wherever he has the house.
Sure.
Yeah. That's probably two.
But now the other side of that, the place where I have a problem, Kevin, is, you know, is it really necessary to take two lobbyist-sponsored trips to Europe?
Well,
I mean, does he not have enough money to buy his own plane ticket?
Yeah, that's true, and you know.
But you know, it didn't seem to slow down. It didn't seem to slow down the Republicans. But again, it's a classic example of IOKIYAR. It's okay if you're a Republican.
Yeah.
That wasn't what took down Tom DeLay, was it? No, Tom DeLay went. You know, he went golfing in Scotland.
Yeah, and he rezoned the whole map of Texas.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, I look forward to hearing from you, and do please stay in touch and travel safely, and I hope you get settled in real well, and that things just go exquisitely for you, Kevin.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And God bless, you know, you and Agnes. You've been great friends to me.
It's been a pleasure, but you're making it sound like it's a goodbye when it ain't.
No, it's not a goodbye. It's going to be a hello again. It's just, you know, you know, it's going to be maybe a week or two before you hear from me. And, you know, once I get settled in.
Well, do please, because, you know, we fret.
Yeah.
That's our job.
Your P.O. box is on the website, right?
The Horn address, it's 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia 25801, and it's right there on the contribute tab.
Oh, okay, no problem. I just wanted to make sure.
All right, Kevin, you take care.
Oh, okay, then.
All right, bye now.
Okay, brother, bye.
Kevin, on his way, to expat status. In South Korea. Sometimes you just gotta leave. And I understand that completely. Hey, I got a bee under my bonnet here. Before we close the show. Just because, you know, I'm an old DJ. It can't be helped. Just sending out a little something to the folks in Amarillo. Oh, darn it. Wait a minute. This always happens to me. Come on. There we go. We'll get there in a minute. But, no, the old DJ in me just won't let me not do this. Kind of got to. So, a little long distance. It's a long distance dedication on the horn. A little something from George Strait. Kind of takes on a different meaning. We'll come back and close things out.
Amarillo by morning, up from San Antonio. Everything that I got is just what I've got on. When that sun is high in that Texas sky, I'll be bucking at the county fair. Amarillo by morning. Amarillo, I'll be there. They took my saddle in Houston, broke my leg in Santa Fe, lost my wife and a girlfriend somewhere along the way. I'll be looking for aid when they pull that gate, and I hope that judge ain't blind. Amarillo by morning, Amarillo's on my mind. Amarillo by morning, up from San Antonio.
I'm not sure he said buck. Might be time to call Repent Amarillo on George Strait. Oh, God. What a night! I don't know about you, but I feel pretty good about this show. This isn't going to be one of those nights when I wind up huddled in the corner sucking my thumb in the fetal position. You know, I do have those nights. I hold myself to a pretty high standard, I think. And there are good nights, and there are not as good nights. This has felt like a great night, even though my throat feels like I gargled razor blades. Hope it hasn't been too difficult to listen to. Thanks, everybody, for a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful program this evening. I really appreciate it. I'll be back tomorrow night, of course, for Front Porch Friday. Just a program reminder, I will not be here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and probably Thursday of next week, because I'll be on the road. I'll be in D.C. Trying to teach a little bit of that civics Margaret and I were talking about to my young son, as I did with my daughters this time last year. So there's an open question as to whether there will be any fill-in stuff or whether I'll just be Mr. Rerun. Seriously, thanks. And if I dare say so myself, really, this is radio that doesn't happen elsewhere. It really doesn't. And it's radio that only happens because you choose to make sure that it does. And since I won't be around to remind you of that next week, I fully expect to reach the middle of March about $750 behind our goal. Sorry. But there is a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com and the snail mail address if you prefer not to deal with PayPal and you still want to make sure that the horn stays on the air. Month to month, that's the only way we can go. I wish we had the wherewithal to say, hey, we're set for a year, but we're not. All of this does happen because of your dedication, as well as the dedication of the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch. You heard me talking with Margaret about the circumstances down there with, and you know, that's just one of a number of toxic sludge dams. And the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch work tirelessly, ceaselessly, to bring an end to the nightmare that is mountaintop removal. And that's why I call them the hardest working, bravest people I know. Thanks to John Fox, to Ben Birch, to Sue, to Lottie, to Peter Godbold, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy,
Matt Osborne at osborneinc.com, OSBORNEINK.com, is our Southeast correspondent. My head writer is David in Tennessee. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Good evening and welcome to this Thursday night edition of The Horn. I'm Bob. Welcome along. Oh, I said that already, didn't I? Must have come from the Department of Redundancy Department. But at any rate, we are up and rolling for this Thursday evening. Of course, I'm live tonight. I'm live tomorrow night. But after that, I'll be gone for a couple of days. I'll be gone for a couple of days next week. Ferg and I will be in Washington for what is officially termed the Week in Washington, but is otherwise known as Lobby Week, in which we go door-to-door taking meetings in the with House and Senate legislative assistants in an effort to get past H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act, and S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act. So that will probably take me out of commission on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and quite possibly Thursday. But that's okay, because we have tonight, and we've got tomorrow evening, and that's a good solid 6 hours of cussing and discussing. I hope we will make the best of it. I look forward to it sincerely. In a way, tonight is sort of a, I don't know, we've been, you know what it feels like? It feels like we've been playing catch-up all week long. And that's CATCH-UP, not KETCHUP. We've been playing catch-up all week long. Moran Monday rolled over into Moran Tuesday. last night was prayer meeting, and darned if we don't have the carryovers, because there was just, it was too rich a field last night, such that we got stuff to hit tonight as well. There's all kinds of stuff out there. And please pardon my throat. I feel like I've been gargling razor blades. I don't know why. I'm kind of today. So, there's one of those professional noises that Flush Flemball makes for $40 million a year into the microphone. So I'll try not to strain it too much, but no, my voice is a little icky today. It's been a busy day. It was one of those civics days for my son. I've been down in Charleston all day long. I took him down there today for the purpose of allowing him to be a page for the Senate of the state of West Virginia, and he did. And it was a good experience for him. Had a wonderful day with my son. It's nice when those can happen. And so, basically, I've been up since 6 a.m. and rolled home, came back up the mountain a couple of hours ago, and just got into the studio a little bit ago. But it's, that is one of the glories of a cell phone, is you can sit there and you can follow the news and actually sort of sit in the gallery of the Senate of West Virginia and do show prep. So that's how it worked out for me. You know, one of the things that was pointed out to me after last night's conversation, Maura wrote in and said, Bob, I know why this Patrick McHenry from North Carolina wants Reagan on the $50 bill. He's a Southerner. He wants that General Grant off of there. And, you know, I was almost ashamed of myself. Being a Southern fella, I can usually spot that stuff from a mile away. I thought it was just the slavish devotion of the right wing for all things Reagan. But you know what? That makes a ton of sense.
Gonna get that blue-bellied carpetbagger off our national money.
Isn't that just sickening? Would you ever want to? I swear. Like my buddy who used to be an air traffic controller, when they changed the name of National Airport into Reagan National Airport in D.C. He told me once that all of his colleagues refused, and the pilots did too, refused to refer to it as Reagan communications, the radio communications regarding, takeoff, landings, vectoring, and so forth. Just called it National like they always had. If the Repiglicans, and don't think they wouldn't if they didn't get a half a chance, if the Repiglicans could get Reagan on the $50 bill, would you ever, ever, ever possess a $50 bill again? Oh, no, thank you, ma'am. I can hear me at the bank now. Thank you, ma'am. No, two 20s and a 10 will be fine. I don't want that greasy-headed old fascist in my pocket. Not that I have a bunch of hundreds to spend very often, but on getting change for one at a don't give me the Reagan Monopoly money. Give me two Andes and an Alex. I'd do it. Would you? I'd do it in a heartbeat. Because there is some, after last night's little historical jaunt through the origins of Iran-Contra and everything that went before and everything that went after, it would feel like having a pocket full of poop to have Ronald Reagan in my pocket. Absolutely. If these rotten, miserable, stinking bastards from the Repiglican Party want that filthy old senile hypocrite on one more thing. I mean, it galls me to think that there is a United States naval vessel plying the seas with that old creep's name on it. and one with George H.W. Bush's name on it. Jeez, yuck. What a shame to the Navy. No, if the Repiglicans want to name something,